Did you know that right now Geico is offering an extra 15% credit on car, motorcycle, and RV policies? That's 15% on top of what Geico could already save you. So what are you waiting for? Save an extra 15% when you switch by October 7th. Visit geico.com to learn more.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News, This Morning, with your host, Gordon Deal.
More record COVID cases. Good morning, I'm Gordon Deal, along with Jennifer Koschenka. It is Wednesday, July 8th. Thanks for being with us, and here's what we have for you this hour.
At least seven states have set daily records for the most reported coronavirus infections. Here are the two with the biggest jumps.
Calling it a puppet of China, President Trump says the U.S. is withdrawing from the World Health Organization.
We're just learning details now, but Supreme Court Chief Justice John Roberts took a spill last month that required sutures to treat a head injury.
And will an advertiser boycott force Facebook to change the way it polices hate speech?
Disney was the biggest advertiser on Facebook for the first 6 months of the year, more than $200 million. You know, and some of these other ones are less than $1 million. You know, we are not seeing a significant impact from this yet. But, you know, who knows?
Nathan Bomey at USA Today on why advertisers may not get the changes that they seek from Facebook. The Trump administration plans to withdraw from the World Health Organization, saying the body is under China's influence and failed to respond with accountability to the coronavirus outbreak. The U.S. State Department sent notice to the U.N. on Monday. The exit won't take effect until next July, leaving it contingent on Mr. Trump's re-election. Meanwhile, WHO Director General Dr. Tedros Ghebreyesus spoke at a briefing in Geneva.
The outbreak is accelerating, and we have clearly not reached the peak of the pandemic.
President Trump has said the U.S. would redirect the funds it currently sends the World Health Organization to other public health needs because the agency failed to make reforms the U.S. wanted. Democratic presidential candidate Joe Biden says if he wins the White House in November, he'll rejoin the WHO on his first day in office. Kentucky Congressman James Comer supports leaving, saying in a statement, quote, China lied, the WHO complied, and Americans died. The U.S. coronavirus outbreak has surpassed 3 million confirmed cases as more states reported record numbers of new infections, and Florida faced an impending shortage of intensive care unit hospital beds. California, Hawaii, Idaho, Missouri, Montana, Oklahoma, and Texas yesterday set record highs for new cases. The biggest jumps occurred in Texas and California, with more than 10,000 each. About 24 states have reported disturbingly high infection rates as a percentage of diagnostic tests conducted over the past week. In Texas alone, the number of hospitalized patients more than doubled in just 2 weeks. Meanwhile, President Trump is urging governors to get kids back in classrooms this fall.
It's very important. It's very important for our country. It's very important for the well-being of the student and the parents. So we're going to be putting a lot of pressure on open your schools in the fall.
The spike in cases has driven many more Americans to seek out COVID-19 screenings. The Department of Health and Human Services now says it's adding short-term surge testing sites in three metropolitan areas in Florida, Louisiana, and Texas. Well, we're learning just now that Supreme Court Chief Justice John Roberts suffered a fall last month at a country club in Maryland that required a night in the hospital. We get more from this morning's Mike Gavin.
Mr. Roberts, who's 65, was taken by ambulance to a hospital after the incident on Father's Day at the Chevy Chase Club. His head was reportedly covered in blood and required sutures. He has twice experienced seizures, in 1993 and in 2007, but Supreme Court spokeswoman Kathleen Arberg said doctors ruled out that possibility from his recent tumble. She said doctors believe he was dehydrated. Justice Roberts did not publicly reveal what happened. The Washington Post received a tip. Gordon.
Thanks, Mike. Justice Roberts has not released detailed information about his health or whether he takes medication because of previous seizures. The nine members of the court generally decide for themselves how much information to release about their health. Thanks for spending time with us. In the age of coronavirus, there was a lot of talk of a new normal emerging. Yet in the presidential campaign of 2020, both President Trump and former Vice President Joe Biden actually are promising a return to an old normal, albeit in dramatically different ways. Here to explain is Jerry Seib, executive Washington editor at The Wall Street Journal. Jerry, are they trying to define normal in their own way?
I think so, yeah. And I think to some extent there's a recognition that people are worn out with all the summers of the years of controversies, really, that we've had. Now, maybe they want to return to normal, but what normal means for Joe Biden and what normal means for Donald Trump looks very different at this point. I mean, if you take the Biden case, I think the Biden campaign and Joe Biden himself are calculating that people are just sort of worn out by, you know, 4 years of sort of constant controversy under Donald Trump, you know, government institutions under attack. And they're saying, look, in the Biden world, government institutions will be respected. Things will work the way they're supposed to. There will be actual compromises between Democrats and Republicans. We'll respect traditional alliances. And oh, by the way, we will make big changes in response to the George Floyd moment, but we will do them within the democratic system the same way we did after the Civil War and the same way we did during the Civil Rights Movement in the 1960s. That's the normal that I can take this country back to. And I think you saw President Trump, by contrast, over the 4th of July weekend in a couple of pretty tough speeches, one at Mount Rushmore and one at the White House on the 4th of July, basically say something different about what normal is. He's saying basically normal is when people aren't tearing down Confederate statues and statues of Ulysses S. Grant in the streets, when nobody's taking over blocks of downtown Seattle, when basic American heritage sees America's founding fathers not as villains but as visionaries. That's the normal that I think we ought to have. That's the normal I want to take the country to. And that's kind of the cultural message that Donald Trump delivered in 2016, and now, in a way, he's ramping it up for 2020.
All right, so you touched on it a little bit, but I was going to say it seems that for some folks, normal would equal complacency, which was part of why Mr. Trump got elected in 2016.
Well, I think that's probably changed since 2016, though, because I think he's sharpened the questions in many ways, which is kind of what Donald Trump does. I think that what Joe Biden is trying to say to people, sometimes explicitly, sometimes implicitly, is that this country can work well and normal and without all the drama if we respect institutions and respect the guardrails on democracy, which is a phrase that he actually has used, and that's the normal people want, and they've had enough of the kind of hyper-drama of the Trump years. And I think the Trump message has always been, the country's off on the wrong track, and it's because of a whole combination of economic and cultural forces that we've let get out of control, and we got to go back. And a lot of people think it's, well, let's go back to the 1950s. I don't know if that's fair or not, but there's a kind of a return to a day at America of yore that he's talking about that appeals to a lot of his core voters.
Speaking with Jerry Seib, executive Washington editor at The Wall Street Journal. And he's written a piece entitled Trump and Biden Offer Dramatically Different Versions of Normal in America. How about normal economically speaking?
Well, that normal economically speaking depends on what you think normal is in the age of coronavirus, right? Because the virus is really not shut down, but has really squished the American economy. So what does that mean? I think the Trump message on normal is, hey, we just got to move past the virus. Stop being obsessed by it. Don't let it paralyze us and start reopening the country, and we'll deal with the health effects as we need to. And I think the Biden message is we can't have a normal economy without a much more robust government plan to deal with the virus. We can't have a safe reopening of the economy until we have a safe environment in which the coronavirus is under much better control than it is now. So I'm going to offer you things like a much more robust government testing program, a bigger use of the Defense Production Act to produce the medical supplies that health professionals still need. Things like what one Biden advisor mentioned to me, like maybe we need something like blue stickers that businesses can put in their windows, much as businesses did during the New Deal to show they were supporting the New Deal programs. These stickers would say, I'm abiding by government safety standards, so it's okay and safe for you, Mr. Consumer or Mrs. Consumer, to come into my shop. Things like that. So I think the Biden message is the economy can't be normal until the virus is under much more control than it is now. I'm going to do more to make that happen.
Thanks, Jerry. Jerry Seib, Executive Washington Editor at The Wall Street Journal. 21 minutes after the hour on This Morning. Here's Jennifer Koshenka.
And now, the three big things you need to know. Number one.
Texas is seeing a surge in the number of people testing positive for the coronavirus since it began aggressively loosening restrictions on gatherings in May. Hospitalizations due to COVID-19 in the second largest state in the country have more than doubled in the last 2 weeks. And leaders in Houston and San Antonio are warning their health facilities could become overwhelmed in the coming days.
Number two.
President Trump is launching an all-out effort to press state and local officials to reopen schools in the fall.
We're very much going to put pressure on governors and everybody else to open the schools, to get them open.
Trump says some states are keeping schools closed not because of coronavirus risks, but for political reasons.
Number three.
The Trump administration has notified Congress it is formally withdrawing the U.S. from the World Health Organization. The letter was very short and confirmed it will trigger a one-year withdrawal timeline. President Trump initially announced his intention to withdraw from the WHO in May and has consistently accused the organization of aiding China in covering up the origins of the virus. A new book by President Trump's niece, Mary, which his family sued to stop from being published, paints the president as an emotionally damaged narcissist who has cheated to get ahead. Too much and never enough, how my family created the world's most dangerous man, claims Trump paid someone to take an SAT test, White House Press Secretary Kayleigh McEnany.
It's ridiculous, absurd allegations that have absolute no bearing in truth. Have yet to see the book, but it is a book of falsehoods.
The book is scheduled for release next Tuesday. What's in a name? A lot, if it's the perfect name, and this one certainly is. More than a month after Olympic sprinter Usain Bolt and his girlfriend Cassie Bennett welcomed their daughter, Bolt has revealed the baby's name, Olympia Lightning Bolt. In photos posted to Instagram, Bolt yesterday shared the first public photos of the infant, who was born in May. The 33-year-old Bolt, considered the greatest sprinter ever, has said he would not push his children to pursue track and field. But with a name like that...
Wow. Olympia Lightning Bolt.
Perfect.
I mean, you can only go by Lightning. By the time you get to school, she can only go by Lightning. That's it. Like Lightning McQueen, Lightning Hopkins. Like these, you have to be extraordinary to be Lightning.
Just perfect.
Thanks, Jen. 23 minutes after the hour. Coming up next, more colleges struggle to strike today's balance. Let's talk about some numbers other than the stock market. Just how much could you save, for example, in 1 year by switching to Harry's? You have your choice. You could buy 26 cups of coffee in New York City, or 3 deep dish pizza dinners in Chicago, or, keeping it closer to home, 6 months of Netflix. At $2 a blade, Harry's can save you hundreds over time, but they don't skimp on quality. With Harry's, I get a smooth, close shave, and the precision trimmer blade makes it easy to get the tough spots around my goatee. Get your own Harry's trial set by going to harrys.com/Gordon. And if you love it, blade refills are delivered directly to your door on your schedule, with or without a subscription. It's super convenient. Listeners of our show can redeem their Harry's trial set at harrys.com/Gordon. You'll get a weighted ergonomic handle for a firm grip, a 5-blade razor with a lubricating strip and trimmer blade, rich lathering shave gel with aloe to keep your skin hydrated, and a travel blade cover to keep your razor dry and easy to grab on the go. Go to harrys.com/Gordon to start shaving and saving today. As the coronavirus pandemic shows little sign of abating, more prominent colleges are announcing they'll be offering classes primarily remotely this fall. Harvard announced Monday all of its courses will be offered online. Rutgers University and Princeton made similar announcements. Many schools are heavily reliant on tuition and what's known as auxiliary revenue that could be put in jeopardy with a remote semester. It's a story by Jillian Berman, reporter at MarketWatch. Jillian, the balance of revenue and safety.
Yeah, so for a lot of colleges, the question of whether to open is both a financial and a safety question, as you said. If you don't offer at least some classes in person, you know, there's a risk that students won't be willing to pay full tuition. And then in addition to that, a lot of colleges do earn some money from students' room and board. And so obviously if you offer classes only online or mostly online, you put that revenue at risk as well.
The number you quoted in your story, about 60% of schools still planning for an in-person semester. Does that number get chipped away every couple of weeks? Is it getting lower?
Yeah. It seems like it. So the Chronicle of Higher Education has been tracking these announcements. About a month or so ago, when I wrote about, you know, some plans being announced, that number of schools saying they were going to do in person was around 68%.
Yeah.
We are getting more announcements that are shifting the balance a bit.
Hmm. All right. So one of the factors here, too, is this recent decision regarding foreign students. Explain that.
Yeah, basically, you know, the announcement from ICE is that foreign students who are participating in their courses completely online would not be eligible for a student visa, and so they would have to return to their home countries or transfer to some place where, you know, they could do some in-person classes.
And why does that matter?
So that matters because it puts a lot of schools in a bind. You know, a lot of colleges have, you know, relatively large populations of international students. And so if they want to go totally online, that would put a lot of their international students at risk.
Yeah. We're speaking with Jillian Berman, personal finance reporter at MarketWatch. Her piece is called "As Pandemic Rages, Prominent Colleges Announce Online Semesters." You said, too, that some of these announcements from, you know, the wealthy private schools like a Harvard or Yale or Princeton provide cover for other schools. How so?
Yeah, so, you know, I was talking to an expert about this, and basically what he said is that, you know, if a school like Harvard or Princeton says we're going mostly or totally online, other less prominent schools can say, oh, we did it, and look, Harvard did it, Princeton did it. And so it kind of indicates that it's like a best practice in some way, or they can point to it, you know, for anybody who complains or asks questions.
Jillian Berman, personal finance reporter at MarketWatch. 30 minutes after the hour on This Morning, America's First News.
For streaming, creating, gaming, and more, power your passions for less during Dell's exceptional cyber savings event. Enjoy up to $400 off stunning laptops like the XPS, along with high-performance desktops and next-level Alienware systems, redefining what's possible with 10th-gen Intel Core processors. Shop special prices on top brand electronics and accessories, plus enjoy free shipping on everything. Don't forget to ask for Intel when you call 800-BUY-DELL. That's 800-BUY-DELL.
Michigan is one of the best places in the country to do business. But you don't have to take our word for it. Take Patty Poppes, president and CEO of Consumers Energy, instead.
All of the innovation that's occurring around robotics, AI, it's happening here in Michigan. We have chemical companies, we have pharmaceutical companies, we have medical device manufacturers. Michigan is a magnet for innovators and dreamers.
Big things are happening in business here. Find out why by searching Michigan Pure Opportunity.
Thanks for spending time with us on this Wednesday, July 8. Gordon Deal, Jennifer Koshenka, some of our top stories and headlines. More states set records for daily coronavirus infections. Trump pulling the U.S. from the World Health Organization. We're just learning now that Chief Justice John Roberts took a fall last month that required sutures for a head wound. SpaceX to launch more satellites today. Eagles receiver DeSean Jackson apologizes for anti-Semitic social media posts. Ivy League schools will decide today about fall sports. And the ultra marathoner who ran around South Florida for a day and a half to raise money for charity. That story in about 20 minutes. Hundreds of advertisers say they won't spend money on Facebook over concerns the social media company is not doing enough to stop hate speech. But the exodus of spenders may not be enough to push CEO Mark Zuckerberg to make the level of change that critics are demanding. Why not? Here's Nathan Bomey, business reporter at USA Today. Nathan, start with the basics.
Well, the protests are really taking multiple forms because there's just this confluence of, disgust, honestly, with the content that's on Facebook when it comes to hate and misinformation. Just generally, the confluence of all of that has really caused advertisers to say that, you know, enough is enough, that Facebook needs to step in and take a more proactive approach to getting that content off the platform. And of course, we've seen a debate in this country over the last several years about what role the social media companies need to play in doing that. And Facebook has been pretty hands-off, and now they're coming under more pressure to step up to the plate.
Okay. Does Facebook have the capability to police it differently or better, whatever advertisers want?
Yeah, and that's a really good question, because I think that one thing that a lot of us, as ordinary folks, tend to sort of fail to understand, fail to grasp, is the sheer scale of Facebook. I mean, right now they have 2.6 billion people who use the service at least once a month, and, you know, about 2 billion or so who use it almost every day. The sheer volume of what's going on there is so much that nobody can adequately monitor it on a, you know, minute-by-minute basis. And so the question is, can they use some sort of artificial intelligence, basically algorithms, to try to sort out the content that's on the platform? You know, if a video goes viral, for example, that is full of lies, which are misinformation, for example, the Plandemic video that, you know, surfaced a couple months ago about the coronavirus vaccine. It had a lot of misinformation that went viral for quite a while before Facebook took it down. You know, in the early going, though, let's say only a few of us share it. You know, are they ever going to catch that kind of thing? It is very difficult. Now, when it comes to hate, you know, that's something that you can see people, you know, are flagging various posts, for example, and do they take action when those posts are flagged? I think that they've made some progress there, but a lot of the, you know, civil rights groups who have been leading this boycott feel like Facebook hasn't gone far enough.
Mm. Facebook, I presume, stands by the First Amendment in some parts, too, saying, listen, folks can post what they feel.
Yeah, that's part of it. You know, I think what you see here is a twofold argument, which is, you know, for starters, the 1996 Communications Decency Act, which is, you know, a law that nobody was paying much attention to in the 90s, but has come to be very significant, protects the social media companies from liability for content on the platform. So if I say something defamatory, they can't be sued for it. It's sort of the same way that if I, you know, lie about you on the telephone, that the telecommunications company can't be sued for that. But, you know, there's some people questioning whether that liability should still be there. And then, you know, so Facebook can say, well, we're not liable, for starters. And then secondly, like you just mentioned, the First Amendment. If we want to take action, meaning if Facebook wants to take action and take something off the platform or allow it to stay on there, they can often say that the First Amendment allows them to do that.
We're speaking with Nathan Bomey, business reporter at USA Today. We're talking about the Facebook advertising boycott. How much money is actually at stake here from some of these companies?
Well, I think it's important to mention that although it looks like a lot, it's really not the significant part of Facebook's business. You know, when a company like Denny's, for example, the restaurant chain, announces a boycott, okay, that sounds significant. But you know what? Denny's doesn't really spend much money on Facebook. So, you know, that's not a big impact. Now, Home Depot, you know, if that does, that's a little bit bigger. But, for example, let me give you a ballpark number. Disney was the biggest advertiser on Facebook for the first 6 months of the year, more than $200 million. You know, and some of these other ones are less than $1 million. You know, we are not seeing a significant impact from this yet, but, you know, who knows? I think part of the problem is, you know, so small and medium-sized businesses oftentimes don't have much of an alternative. So, you know, if they were to leave Facebook, it would actually hurt their business.
There's Nathan. Nathan Bomey, business reporter at USA Today. Critics, by the way, have an initial list of 10 recommendations that they say would help Facebook corral hate speech and make civil rights a priority when moderating content. Also, Facebook plans to release the company's third civil rights audit today, as well as other policy changes that were already under consideration. It's 20 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Coming up next, meals for NBA players raising eyebrows. Did you know that right now Geico is offering an extra 15% credit on car, motorcycle, and RV policies? That's 15% on top of what Geico could already save you. So what are you waiting for? Save an extra 15% when you switch by October 7th. Visit geico.com to learn more. Let me tell you about my new favorite way to pass the time while commuting. It's the app called Blinkist. Blinkist works on your phone, your tablet, or your web browser. Blinkist takes the need-to-know information from thousands of nonfiction books and whittles it down to just 15 minutes. Successful people like business leaders are well known for reading self-improvement books. I just finished listening to Snowball, a Warren Buffett biography. Listen to Blinkist while commuting or maybe exercising, even while you're waiting for your kids to finish practice. Blinkist has the latest titles from bestseller lists as well as the classic nonfiction titles you always meant to read. I also like listening to some of the history titles since I never had much good history in school. Right now, for a limited time, Blinkist has a special offer just for our audience. Go to Blinkist.com/morning to try it free for 7 days and save 25% off your new subscription. That's Blinkist, spelled B-L-I-N-K-I-S-T, blinkist.com/morning to start your free 7-day trial. You'll also save 25%, but only when you sign up at blinkist.com/morning. Thanks for being with us. Welcome into Wednesday. It's time now for the Mic Drop with this morning's Mike Gavin.
Good morning. Well, you might remember we told you last week about the Major League Soccer players arriving to play in Orlando and how some were less than thrilled at the pricey and underwhelming meals being served to them at the Disney World Resort. You can imagine then how some NBA players reacted when they arrived to Orlando and got their first taste of what life in the bubble was going to be like. Denver Nuggets guard Troy Daniels was the first to post on Twitter about the lack of substance in his dinner, posting a pic of a cafeteria tray scattered with small portions of salad, fruit, pasta, chips, and condiments, drawing comparisons again to the ill-fated Firefest and making some wonder if a discount airline might have been involved in the catering process. Isaiah Thomas, the one who currently plays in the NBA, not the NBA Hall of Famer, tweeted what a lot of people were probably thinking. There's no way LeBron James would be eating this kind of meal. To be fair, NBA writer Mark Stein tweeted that the food option should improve after 48 hours once the players are no longer quarantined to their rooms. So they have to serve these meals to each individual room. They're not allowed to leave, but I guess at some point they will be able to congregate together as a team and eat more meals that they are more used to, I suppose.
Okay, we'll see. We'll keep an eye out on social media for the posts of pictures.
Yes, but if one thing, if the soccer players were complaining, that's one thing. Again, they don't get paid as much money, but when these sort of millionaire NBA players showed up, that's when it was really going to hit the fan, right?
I think it was a video... was it yesterday I saw of a WNBA facility?
Yeah.
Or a laundry room?
Right.
Where the players are expected to
do
their laundry. I mean, there was like moldy carpet and there was a mouse trap lying around. It just, does not seem good.
Not what everyone was thinking when they were going to Disney. Not the vacation that they were thinking of, right?
Not home.
When they were going there. And Instacart drivers are used to dropping things off at people's homes. They don't usually wind up with live cargo when they leave. That's what happened in Texas when a family's pet chicken was caught on camera hopping into the trunk of a delivery driver. Justin Matthews said his family noticed that Reba, one of their three pet chickens, was missing from their Fair Oaks Ranch yard. So he checked the footage on his Ring doorbell camera. The video showed an Instacart driver making a grocery delivery to the home 4 hours earlier when Reba jumped into the open trunk. The driver, not noticing the chicken, closed the trunk and drove away. The family contacted Instacart and learned Reba had jumped out of the driver's trunk in the parking lot of the local Costco store. The driver, believing he had been pranked, left the chicken behind. Matthews posted photos and video of Reba on Facebook in the hopes of finding her current whereabouts, and he was contacted by a woman who had found the family's pet in the parking lot and brought her safely home.
Oh, the story of Reba and her travels.
How about, not noticing the chicken when you close trunk?
Yeah.
And then again, opening the trunk, the chicken jumps out. I'm like, oh, I guess somebody was messing with me.
Yeah.
You know, I'll just let the chicken ride.
Wow. Hey, welcome back, by the way.
Oh, good to be
Mike
here.
Mike was off the past 2 days. Somebody, Carlos on Twitter,
yes,
had said, I haven't heard the mic drop this week. Is he okay? I responded by saying, by okay, do you mean my personal opinion of him? I called you reckless and a danger to society.
Mm-hmm.
Would you think that is that accurate at all? Or
I'll just say it's always good to be missed.
Thanks, Mike. 13 minutes now in front of the hour. Not everybody has home internet, as you know. Some can't afford it. Others just don't have access to broadband service. But what if you need it? Maybe your home internet just went on the fritz, or you just want to get out of the house and keep working. What can you do? USA Today put together some options. Number one, check with your local internet provider. Even if you're not a subscriber, for example, Comcast Xfinity is offering 1.5 million free Wi-Fi hotspots nationally. It's a coronavirus perk that expires at the end of the year. Also, Google says it's currently offering free hotspots anywhere that Google Fiber serves, even without being a customer. Number two, park your car near a Wi-Fi hotspot like the front of your local Starbucks. Also, try the parking lots of McDonald's and Panera Bread. Number three, you can head to the library. Access Wi-Fi from either in front of the building or the parking lot. And number four, park by a school. Many community colleges are leaving on the Wi-Fi for students to work on their laptops in school parking lots. 8 minutes now in front of the hour on this morning. Once again, here's Jennifer Koschenka.
And now, the three big things you need to know. Number one.
More than four dozen hospitals in Florida are reporting that their intensive care units have reached full capacity as COVID-19 cases surge. Governor Ron DeSantis spoke with Fox.
Well, we have no doubt seen a major increase in cases. The median age of our new cases was in the 50s about a month and a half ago. Now that's dropped into the 30s. We've had days where the median age was 33.
Hospitalizations in Texas have more than doubled in the past 2 weeks.
Number two.
President Trump says the U.S. is not closing, will never close, as he once again pushed the country to fully reopen. He says he will pressure governors to open schools.
It's very important. It's very important for our country. It's very important for the well-being of the student and the parents. So we're going to be putting a lot of pressure on open your schools in the fall.
Trump also said the death toll in the U.S. could have been 2.5 or 3 million people, and his administration has saved literally hundreds of thousands of lives.
Number three.
The personal protective gear that was in dangerously short supply during the early weeks of the crisis is running low again as the virus resumes its rapid spread. A national nursing union is concerned gear has to be reused. A doctor's association is warning that physicians' offices are closing because they can't get masks and other supplies. The director of the FBI says acts of espionage and theft by China's government pose the greatest long-term threat to the future of the U.S. Christopher Wray described a multi-pronged disruption campaign.
We've now reached the point where the FBI is opening a new China-related counterintelligence case about every 10 hours.
In a nearly hour-long speech yesterday, Wray outlined a stark picture of Chinese interference, a far-reaching campaign of economic espionage, data and monetary theft, and illegal political activities using bribery and blackmail to influence U.S. policy. And the research team at Colorado State University now forecasting 20 named storms for the hurricane season. They point to many key factors that favor above-average activity across the Atlantic, including sea surface temperatures, which are well above average and are expected to remain so through October. This is the earliest in the season that the group has made a prediction this high.
Oh, dear. I hope they're wrong. Boy, it would
That's
be
all we need here.
I hope we go back and just say, man, you were way off.
Yes, right.
Thanks, Jen. 6 minutes in front of the hour. Coming up next, how an ultra marathoner spent part of her pandemic downtime.
For streaming, creating, gaming, and more, power your passions for less during Dell's exceptional cyber savings event. Enjoy up to $400 off stunning laptops like the XPS, along with high-performance desktops and next-level Alienware systems, redefining what's possible with 10th-gen Intel Core processors. Shop special prices on top brand electronics and accessories, plus enjoy free shipping on everything. Don't forget to ask for Intel when you call 800-BUY-DELL. That's 800-BUY-DELL.
Michigan is one of the best places in the country to do business. But you don't have to take our word for it. Take Patty Poppes, president and CEO of Consumers Energy, instead.
All of the innovation that's occurring around robotics, AI, it's happening here in Michigan. We have chemical companies, we have pharmaceutical companies, we have medical device manufacturers. Michigan is a magnet for innovators and dreamers.
Big things are happening in business here. Find out why by searching Michigan Pure Opportunity.
There's going out for a run, then there's really going out for a run. An ultra marathoner from Florida ran 150 miles through Miami-Dade County for charity. CBS says 49-year-old Karen Lubetsky, a mother of three, started on Sunday morning and ran the whole way through. She finished in about 38 hours and 3 minutes on Monday night around 10 p.m. Her effort raised $12,000 for the Childhood Cancer Project. Ms. Lubetsky decided to do this after a run or a marathon she had been registered for was canceled due to the ongoing coronavirus pandemic. Exhausting events, by the way, are not new to her. She's a two-time Ironman finisher and holds two Guinness records with her friend Carrie Grusin, a 72-year-old woman who's quadriplegic. In November 2018, Karen and Carrie broke the world record for most triathlon races hauling another person completed in 1 month. In November 2019, the two broke another record for the fastest marathon pushing a woman in a wheelchair. Ms. Lubetsky's longest before now had been 135 miles. For Jennifer Koschenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Morning, America's First News.